When almost everybody is staying at home, that doesn't bode well, obviously, for the state's tourism industry. And for all those tourists flying into some of the nation's biggest tourist destinations, well, they're not. Some estimates have airport traffic down as much as 90%. The not-so-friendly skies has had a ripple effect on businesses that rely on airports for their livelihoods. Now the restrictions are being slowly lifted, we'll get a feel for how businesses are going to recover. The governor convened several task forces to look at how and when we should be going back to business as normal. One of the business leaders tapped to be part of the Reopen Florida Task Force is the CEO of Tampa International Airport, Joe Lopano. Joe, welcome to Florida Matters.
Hey, thank you, Steve. Glad to be with you.
Appreciate it. Now, Joe, we'll get to what the task force decided in a bit, but first I want to talk about how much Tampa International has been impacted. You know, we're both talking to us from our respective homes. You're in your kitchen and I'm in my living room. And I know it's got to be killing you not being able to walk down those airport corridors every day.
It really is. It's something that I enjoyed doing every single day. So my usual routine is if I do not have a meeting scheduled, I will be out in the terminal or out at an airside greeting my workers and our customers, and those are the things I really enjoy. And so for right now, all that's been put on hold.
I'd imagine your workers make up the majority of people in the airport right now, is that right?
There are probably more workers than people right now.
All right, so what I've been reading, airport traffic at most airports in the nation is down by 9/10. What are we seeing at Tampa International right now?
97% reduction in travelers. During the spring break, it would be not uncommon for us to have 40,000 travelers in the terminals, and today we just barely broke 2,000.
Wow. So tell me about the impact it's having on the businesses there. Are any businesses open? I'd imagine a few restaurants are doing takeout services. Anything else still open there?
Yeah, we have at each airside, we have left two businesses open, one food and beverage and one retail. And at the main terminal, we still have two restaurants open, Wendy's and also the Chick-fil-A are open.
Yeah, I would imagine since most of the concessionaires there are chains, or bigger businesses, they're probably more apt to come roaring back when business gets back to normal rather than some of the smaller mom-and-pop places we see elsewhere.
Yeah, well, the thing is that we've introduced a lot of local restaurant concepts and local businesses into the airport, and they are not national chains, and they probably don't have the kinds of capitalization that, let's say, a TGI Fridays would have had. So it's a little bit different. It's about 50% national brands and 50% local brands.
Yeah, business was doing so good that you actually opened the terminals that you have to take the trains to, that you really have to have a ticket to get on them. So you were opening them up on a kind of a day-by-day basis, and that was going pretty well, I'd imagine. How was that going, and how do you think that's going to be affected in the future?
It was going great. I mean, we started out allowing, I think it was 100 people, and we increased that and allowed it every day. And it was going great. I mean, people actually just like hanging out at the airport, watching people go through the terminals and having a good lunch or a drink or whatever, or a date perhaps. And I think that that will probably come back, just like I believe most things that we were used to before will come back. And but I don't think it's going to be anytime soon.
Yeah. Any predictions on that? I mean, it's kind of hard to tell right now. We don't know if this virus is going to come roaring back in the fall or anything. But I'd imagine you all have some kind of a plan you're working on in case that happens. Can you fill us in a little bit on that?
Yeah, we've been modeling various scenarios as to how this recovery will take place, whether it's a W-shaped or a U-shaped or an L-shaped. It's all the alphabets. But my finance guys have been modeling all different scenarios. And I think the generally accepted feeling is that we will not see pre-COVID levels of passenger traffic for 2 to 4 years.
Wow. So there have been reports of some of the airlines have been cutting back. I read that Southwest Airlines, for instance, is cutting pay and benefits and suspended more than half their flights and plan to drop more in the coming weeks. Now, they're the largest airline at Tampa International. I mean, how much is this going to affect other businesses at the airport?
The effect is terrible, actually. It affects everybody. It affects the shared ride, Uber world, taxi world, rental car world, hotel world, everything that the state of Florida relies on has been affected in a very, very negative way. So we hope to keep our employees in place. We hope to keep our team in place. And as we come back, we're going to need people to run the airport because, you know, an airport is not a place that you can close off certain sections and save workers or save money. It's an all or nothing kind of proposition. So we need to be ready for when we come back. We are seeing anecdotally some increases in passengers, and we believe that, you know, over a long period of time, people are going to either discover therapeutics or understand more about social distancing and how to avoid this thing, and they'll begin to try to live a semi-normal life using good safety precautions.
Well, when I think of social distancing, probably being inside an airline is the last place I'd really want to be. You're in a metal tube 8 miles high and breathing recirculated air. And heaven forbid, if you're in the middle seat, you know, you're breathing somebody's lap right there. I mean, that's a really difficult place to social distance. How is that going to be handled, do you think?
So that really is something, Steve, that the airlines are working on right now. And what we're trying to do at the airport is we're launching something called TPA Ready. And what we're doing is we're trying to, in the lane that we're in, which is the airport lane, we're trying to make it as safe, clean, and secure as possible. And then when the airlines figure out what they want to do, it'll be a seamless transition through the airport, onto the airplane, and hopefully everyone can feel confident and safe. So some of the things that we've put in place that we benchmarked others, quite frankly, to learn what the best practices are, including companies like Walmart or Universal Studios. And we also benchmarked our European airport colleagues who are now opening before us. But we never closed, but they're starting to reopen their economies. And we've learned a lot of things. I mean, for an example, all of our employees are required to wear masks anytime they're in the public area. And we've encouraged our tenants and concessionaires to do the same thing. And we're encouraging our customers who come out to fly to wear masks when they come out for travel. In addition to that, we've put down various markers on the floors to keep people distanced by at least 6 feet. We've changed our security checkpoint lines to keep people further separated. We've installed plastic shields at the ticket counters and gate counters to help protect the workers from any spread of the germ. We've very much increased our cleaning protocols, especially focus on high-touch areas, such as railings, elevator buttons, and our shuttle trains as well, keep them nice and clean. So we're trying everything we can to make the customer feel safe and make sure that we're doing everything that an airport can do. Now, what airlines do will be up to them, but we're focused on our part of the journey.
So it's all basically about consumer confidence, convincing people that it's safe to come. Are you in concert with the airlines at all on these protocols? Are you totally separate? How does that work?
Now, we're talking to all of our station managers. In fact, I've spoken to a number of different CEOs, most recently the CEO of Spirit Airlines. And in fact, we were both on the task force together. And we talked about having a seamless solution because when people are sitting in the waiting area to get on a plane, that is the airport. That's still our seating. So we've tried to space that out better, and we've tried to block certain seats so people can't sit next to each other. And so that's what we're doing, and we've coordinated that with the airlines as well.
All right. In the meantime, there's a lot of federal stimulus money going around out there to bigger businesses and airports as well. Florida airports are getting nearly $1 billion in federal stimulus money. I believe the most, about $200 million, is going to Miami International, and Tampa International is going to receive $81 million. And I'm wondering, what's that money going to be used for? Is that just operations to fill in the gaps?
At this point, our revenue is essentially zero. And our intention, in fact, part of the CARES Act money requires that we retain our employees, at least 90% of our employees. So this is really a way for us to keep people on the job, keep them off unemployment, keep the airport running, because as you know, we still have thousands of passengers today coming through. They're mostly essential travelers. They're not doing this because they just feel like taking a ride. But we still have to keep the airport operational.
What about people like the guys I'm sure they have a name, who direct the planes in with the lights in their hands on the tarmac. What could you possibly do with them? I mean, there can't be enough work for them to go around.
Well, they work for the airlines, and that's called marshalling. So that's an airline kind of decision.
So you have not laid off anybody? Is that what I'm hearing correctly?
That's correct.
Good news there. So maybe there's some good news in all this COVID madness. Are you able to do some projects there that you wouldn't normally be able to do with normal traffic this time of year?
Yeah, that's a very good question. In fact, we're taking advantage of this slow period with very few cars on the road, very few passengers in the terminals, to expedite our projects. As an example, our ticket counter renovation project was going to take a certain amount of time because we had to work around passengers. We've been able to accelerate that significantly, and that saves us money. And it's also, the work will be done when the passengers come back. They won't have to see all of that pardon our dust stuff. The other one is our roadway project. As you know, we're building express lanes for the roadway. And without having so many cars on the road, we've been able to actually close the blue arrivals drive so that the workers can work 24/7. And that's, again, saving us money and time. And the other thing, we've had projects that were awarded that could have been stopped, especially to small local businesses. But we said, now, hold on. If this money is supposed to be used to keep jobs going, then we want to continue these projects and make sure that we keep these local contractors busy. Because when the time comes that this thing stops, we got to have all these guys ready because we'll come back at some point.
And how is this going to affect your long-term bottom line? I'd imagine there's long-term projects that probably are being negatively impacted by the lack of cash flow right now.
Yeah, there is definitely a problem there. Before all this happened, we had very aggressive growth occurring, and it was a reflection of our regional economy being as strong as it was. So we had plans to build a new international airside, which we now are revisiting. We're restudying that based on various growth curves. And that's one where we really want to be very careful, very thoughtful about what the future holds. And nobody really knows, but we want to be as flexible and ready as we can possibly be.
Yeah, you know, Joe, you keep in close contact with airline executives. And I'm kind of wondering to get your feel on the short-term future of the industry right now. Could we expect to see smaller airlines, less traffic, maybe even some airlines going out of business? They've always had tight cash flow problems.
All of the above, I think. The reality is that the airlines are having to adapt to a new world right now, a new reality. Now, over the long run, if you were to say tomorrow you have a vaccine and this thing goes away in 10 hours, then that's a very different scenario than saying we have this disease up among us for 2 years. At some point, people want to travel. I think that this may make people a bit more cautious, but once we are able to let science take care of this issue, people are going to still have that wanderlust. I mean, they still want to see other places. They want to visit their relatives. I've got grandchildren, and I want to see them very badly.
But I'm sure a lot of people are going to think very closely about that and say, well, I could take a car and minimize any kind of risk and not have to go on an airline breathing recirculated air, too. I'm sure that factors into a lot of people's minds as well, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. I mean, as a matter of fact, Visit Florida's strategic recovery plan, the first phase of that plan is visit Florida from Florida or from Georgia, because people are going to go in their cars. And then the second phase of that plan is to bring people from out of state into Florida on planes. So there is a recognition that automobile travel will be the first thing to come back. And I think Visit Florida is preparing programs for that.
All right, Joe, let's switch gears a little bit here and talk about the governor's task force with reopening the state. Was this basically a kumbaya of business leaders wanting to get back to normal as quickly as possible? Or was there some contention going on in these meetings?
No, it was far from a kumbaya session. There was a lot of interesting questioning, a lot of interesting debate, and learning. I mean, as I said, I picked up a number of things that we've implemented from the people that were on the task force speaking in their various industries. So I think it was everyone had the same goal, which was to try to find a way to open safely. But they all had different points of view about how to get to that goal. And that was the thing that I found most interesting. So I enjoyed it very much. It was an honor for me to be a part of it. And hopefully our recommendations to the governor will be helpful for the state.
Can you talk about what they might be?
Well, in our lane, we'd like to see increased funding for construction projects so that we can accelerate work at this time. Because right now we're able to get cheap labor and good contracts, and we can move it quickly before the passengers come back. If we're able to do that when the market recovers, all the work will be done and the passengers can see new facilities that are able to handle more growth.
All right. When things do get back to normal, any concessions you can give, rent breaks, that sort of thing, to your tenants?
We've given some deferrals. But, you know, the reality of it is, Steve, we're in a business and we have expenses and capital needs and we have debt service and we have to protect our cash as well. So this is a difficult situation for everyone involved. I would like to thank my whole team. There are people today on the front lines who are out there working, wearing their face masks, and they're doing a great job. They've kept the airport open and safe this whole time. We've never closed. So I salute them.
Joe Lopano is CEO of Tampa International Airport. Thanks so much for talking to us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
We'll take a short break, and when we come back, we'll speak with a business professor at the University of South Florida about how businesses in the Tampa Bay area and Florida are coping with the shutdown and whether he thinks the economy will bounce back. This is Florida Matters. Welcome back to Florida Matters. Now from our respective living rooms, we'll speak with Balaji Padmanabhan. He's a professor in the Information Systems and Decision Sciences Department at the University of South Florida, Muma College of Business, and director of their Center for Analytics and Creativity. Welcome to Florida Matters.
Thank you, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much. You know, we just talked to the director of Tampa International Airport. Of course, they have specific problems associated with the closure. I'd like to flesh out some of the unique problems that we're seeing. First of all, what businesses are experiencing right now. I know there's different levels for different kinds of businesses. So first, do we have any numbers about the direct hit that the Tampa Bay economy is getting right now?
You know, I haven't seen exact numbers across all areas, but I think across the board, almost all industries are seeing very high double-digit declines. This includes, I mean, obviously, retail, restaurants, hospitality, been particularly the worst hit. But even sectors like healthcare, where people are choosing to put off elective procedures and so on, physicians and practices are seeing declines of 50 to 70%. In terms of treatments and patients, and that's very substantial.
Yesterday, the governor allowed the reopening of certain businesses, 25% for places like restaurants, museums, libraries, that sort of thing. Do you think that is enough to save a lot of these businesses, or, you know, are people just kind of still very wary about going out right now, either wearing a mask or not wearing a mask?
Couple of things. One is that this is phase one, right? So, and the idea is that in phase one, you're starting at 25% and you have to try to get things going so that people know you're open, you can service people safely, and then we also monitor to make sure that this is not creating huge problems. So I think it's going to be a challenge for how businesses are trying to adhere to that requirement. They will have to plan very, very carefully, but it is very, very much a test. You also have the human element, right, which I think is something we all worry about, because you might say we are open, but there are some people who will, there are probably like a certain number of people who will never go out still, right, who will wait until they're absolutely confident. There'll be those who are ready to go out like 3 weeks ago, right? So, you know, they would likely be the first ones to be out there. So we don't know how many of each type of consumers are out there. Most likely, the ones who will be out there first are, you know, if it's in healthcare, it's the most needy cases. But if it's the optional ones, I think it'll probably be those who are slightly more risk-seeking, right? Who are willing to, in their own minds, they've been ready weeks ago to do this.
So it sounds like what you're saying is the types who will go skydiving and jumping off cliffs, that sort of thing, they're the first ones who are going to go out without a mask, right?
You know, and some of us have seen that already, right? Your essential purchases and so on, when you've gone to these stores, you see a lot of people have been wearing masks, and which is very nice to see. But you also see those who don't. And there are always people who are ready and eager and you know, a little more risk-seeking.
Now, some of the figures I've been seeing are pretty dire. Some reports say as many as 40% of restaurants are going to be closed permanently because of this. I would imagine that might be even a little harsher in the Tampa Bay area and in Florida in general because we're such a service and tourist-oriented economy. What do you think about those figures? Are they maybe too conservative?
No, I don't think they're conservative at all because retail has, in many cases, has been a low-margin business. And, you know, even at 100% capacity, many of these restaurants are not making millions of dollars by staying open, right? So for them to be profitable in a 25% environment is obviously not at all easy, which is why I think a two-month hiatus or a three-month hiatus will destroy most of these establishments. And, you know, I think to the extent that some of them can go down and come back up, you know, and start anew with some capital, the hope is that many of them will get support from the governments to some extent to do exactly that.
Right. You just mentioned the, you know, the consumer confidence is a huge factor here in whether these businesses really come back to life. They have to have the customers or else they're not going to stay in business. And a lot of the fears we've been reading about are perhaps a second wave in the pandemic. I'm wondering if these businesses start opening now and we're hit with more stay-at-home orders. Do you think that's going to be really a fatal blow to a lot of businesses if that happens?
I'm sure they're all thinking about it as we speak here, right? This is something that's going on through their heads, you know, every single day, which is why I think it's extremely important for them and us collectively to make sure that this succeeds. And this means in phase one, businesses reopening exactly as suggested. So I think if there's a temptation to go about 25%, you're not just hurting yourself, you're hurting the entire system. I don't think anybody wants to do this, but it's just something you have to be aware of, that even if you have the capacity or have the crowds, the last thing you want to be is on the news for having people in whom you're not supposed to be. But if we do things the right way, and I think with expanded testing that's going to happen in phase one, the state is trying to build up testing capacity and test a lot more than they've ever tested. I mean, the expectation is that if there is another hotspot, it'll be shut down in a very local way. So we don't have to damage everybody. I'm pretty optimistic that if we do things the right way, we will not have massive shutdowns again. I mean, you can never rule out that possibility. We all know that. But I think the onus is on all of us to do the right things in phase one as the state wants us to do.
All right, Professor, I'm going to ask you to look in your crystal ball. Florida is such a tourism-driven economy. Theme parks are shut. They're not going to reopen for a long time. Most smaller restaurants, like you said, a lot of them are going to go out of business. The long-term hit, it sounds pretty dismal. I've been reading predictions maybe that this will be even worse than the Great Recession. Hopefully it's not. What do you think about those warning signs?
No, I'll take the opposite very happily here. Right? So I'm very optimistic and positive about Florida long-term. If you look at the numbers in our state per capita, the death rates and the others are far lower than what people have feared. I think if you look at states in the US, we are number 24th worst, right? So in the middle. And if you look at the deaths per capita in states, the highest is about 98, New York. The lowest is zero. And Florida is about 6.4. Then if you look at the county level, and if you look at the, you know, most populated counties, 160, 170 most populated counties, Hillsborough County is probably around 100 out of 164, right? So there are 100 other counties in the US which are worse off than us in deaths per capita. So overall, I think in terms of numbers, in terms of deaths per 100,000 or per capita, we haven't done that badly at all. And I think that that is slowly going to make its way across the nation. When they look back at Florida, when the dust settles, assuming that, you know, our reopening is done carefully and things don't spike for us if we do this carelessly, which I hope we don't. But I do think we'll come out of this very favorably. The treatments do materialize by the end of the year and vaccines do happen, you know, in the next 6 months or so. Assuming those scenarios pan out, I see absolutely no reason why a year from now we won't not just be the same, but much better off than we were ever before as a state.
All right. You must be a member of the Optimist Society, sir.
Absolutely. You know, I'm very positive about, I think the state has been going in a very, very good direction for the last 10 years or so. After the previous recession, we have to shake off our Florida man image, which I think has been hurting us unfairly, you know, outside. But I think we've been doing it, you know, one bit at a time collectively in terms of how the economy has become diversified, how new businesses are coming to the state and the kinds of innovation that's happening in Florida. I think there are lots of very, very good stories to tell.
All right, that's good news. I'd like to make an appointment to talk to you in another year to kind of see how that meshes with reality, but I hope it happens.
Yes, I look forward to that.
Professor, anything else you'd like to mention that I have neglected to ask you at all?
No, I think businesses, you know, in the reopening, you know, I would say in phase one, treat it as phase one, plan a lot, adhere, collect data and customer service. So the planning is super critical. The planning would mean, you know, what it is to be 25%. Don't exceed that. Again, you don't want to be on the front page of the news. And I think people who violate that are essentially making the state look bad, right? The governor and the others. It's not just your other businesses. But plan a lot. And I think good planning is going to help here. Just as an extreme, I'm not saying that this is possible. You know, if you think a restaurant has to operate at 25% capacity, but they're able to turn tables at double the speed because they set the expectation now that, look, you know, dinner is 30 minutes, not 1 hour. And you shrink the menu so that your cost of operating is now cut in half. There's no reason why 25% cannot be 100%, right? If you do the math on these numbers. So that's what sometimes good planning can get you. There are apps like, you know, Wait While and others that can let you open table that can also help you text customers instead of having them wait in a queue. So do those types of things. And if you're a large organization like healthcare providers and hospitals, pay a lot of attention to contact and the surfaces that people, you know, touch and so on, so that you have a plan in place for keeping those sanitized a lot. So good planning is the best strategy collectively for us to do this, but collect a lot of data. Like during this time, like as you said, you know, the skydivers and the others who show up, you know, you want to know who they are, right? So make sure that you collect a lot of data about the people who are walking in through your doors now, because you may need them again very soon, and it's good to know who they are. So I think data collection at this point is going to pay tremendous dividends as well, along with good customer service for thanking people to come in at these times. These are common sense things that I think, if done well, will help them sort of establish great customer loyalty and will be great for them in the long run.
All right. It's good to hear some good predictions in addition to all the COVID depressing news we've been hearing. Balaji Padmanabhan is a professor in the Information Systems and Decision Sciences Department at the University of South Florida, Muma College of Business. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Steve.
That's it for today's show. Thanks to Joe Lopano and Professor Balaji Padmanabhan for their help. You can find out more about the travails of Florida's businesses in the age of COVID-19 on our website, wusfnews.org. I'm Steve Newborn. Thanks for listening to Florida Matters.